Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here every week dealing with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means body, mind, and the balance of spirit. And we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask here is, how long are you willing to let freedom, keep freedom on hold? So tonight's topic is actually going to be about the name of the show. The name of the show is Tell the Truth Faster. And I've been here on KXAM for a couple of years now and been doing the show for about 4 years. And every once in a while, I get an email or a phone call from someone or even from a client of mine in my practice who I haven't seen for a while, and they tell me, you know what, I hear your voice and I hear those words, Tell the Truth Faster, that come to me so often, and it's kept me present. It's kept me current, and it's kept me in integrity in what I'm doing and how I'm dealing with people. Well, about a month or so, maybe 6 weeks ago, I got an email from someone who actually was a guest on the show back in 2003. His name is Gary Scott. And Gary wrote, Gary Scott here, remember me? I was thinking of you the other day when I was interviewed for a radio show. Your Tell the Truth Faster philosophy has helped me in every area of my life. I think I'd make a good guest and proponent of your show and philosophy if you ever need someone on the show. No agenda for me. After that trip to California where we met and had coffee, amongst many other things that happened on this trip, I left a 12-year marriage, left Colorado where I'd lived for 15 years, and my career. Now I have a cool girlfriend who's into me. We travel all over the world. I'm the president of an 8-store chain of outdoor shops called Backwoods, making great money. Life is good. I use the Tell the Truth philosophy with my employees, girlfriend, and friends, and it really has made a huge change in my life. Anyhow, I hope all is well and just wanted you to know that, your friend Gary Scott. I hadn't really heard from Gary and since we had done the radio show back in 2003, and it was one of those moments where, like I said, sometimes I get a surprise email or a phone call from someone I haven't heard for a while, and it's very rewarding and kind of humbling when somebody gets in touch with you and said something that you said to them or something that they heard on your show or in a session or just friends of mine that we may have had a conversation about something. And the point of this is always speak your truth because you never know when it's going to have a really positive result or impact on someone. And you may never know that it does, but it's important to say what's on your mind when you feel it's going to be welcomed. So I actually called Gary, and he is my guest tonight again after a couple of years. And Gary Scott is one of the more fascinating people that I've ever met. He's had adventures like you wouldn't believe. He's the author of a book called Summit Strategies, Secrets to Mastering the Everest of Your Life. And he subtitled that actually because he's been up on Everest many times and has climbed many large high peaks all over the world, and he's been a guide for people. And he's also now, because of Summit Strategy, an inspirational and motivational speaker. So hopefully we'll all get some inspiration out of his story tonight. And Gary, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Stuart. It's great to be back and just getting back in touch with you.
I know. It was exciting, actually, and to hear all the changes that went on.
A lot of changes. Thank you.
There are things I want to read out of the book, Summit Strategies, but really I'd like to start just by talking with you for a little while.
Right.
You and I were at a workshop, Joel Roberts workshop, which really had to do with people in media, whether it's publishing a book or radio shows, TV shows, or and he himself was an AM radio talk show host and one of the better known ones throughout the country. And he had been doing these workshops, and you and I actually met at that workshop, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
And you were in town for a couple more days, and basically we got together for breakfast or coffee one morning, I think the day before you were leaving.
That's right.
And we both felt a connection for one another, and I always like when that happens. And
absolutely.
And that's why it was so nice to have you on the show a little while later, and that you're back here. But what was it about Tell the Truth Faster in our conversation that seemed to have that kind of impact for you?
Well, I think you have to go even further back than that, in that, you know, we were in a seminar with, I can't remember, 20 to 30 people, and
right.
I didn't have coffee with anyone else, and you and I didn't really chat that much during the event, but however it happened, synchronicity or
mm-hmm.
destiny or the planets lining up, you know, we
yeah.
agreed to have coffee, and I think during that time, you have that ability to make people feel comfortable enough that you sort of brought out some things in me that I'd been thinking. You asked me some, you know, pretty pointed questions in a very short space of time, and I chose right then to tell you the truth faster, which was really telling myself the truth faster, which was one of numerous incidents that, led me to really make some major life changes and, have affected me very positively to this day.
And what did you do when you left me? Because I don't think we really had any contact after that, so I had no idea this was all going on. But
right.
what was your next step for this? I mean, obviously telling the truth faster seemed to resonate for you. What did you do? I mean, did you go right home and jump on things? Or
no, I really didn't. I came out to that seminar, and then my book was released, and I went on a 10,000-mile road trip where I did a lot of slideshows talking about my book and my adventures and did some book signings. But it was on that, that was meeting with you and discussing that was sort of a catalyst that, and on that road trip, I realized that I was with the wrong person in my relationship, living in the wrong city, doing the wrong thing. And I certainly didn't have a bad life. I was living in Colorado, and but I wanted more, and I wasn't being truthful to myself. And on the end of that road trip, I chatted with somebody about the fact that I wanted to leave my relationship, but I probably should, you know, wait a couple of months until the right time. And she actually said to me, no, you need to do it now. And that...
When is there ever a right time?
When is there ever a right time? And that went back to telling the truth to that person faster. And even though it was very, very difficult to say to someone that you cared about that, you know, sorry, but I got to go, it was a great thing, and it turned out to be a great thing for both her and I.
Well, what happened to her? I mean, obviously, my guess is it took her by surprise, and it hurt a lot, and yet somehow it was a good move for her, too. How do you explain that?
Well, it was... I was on my book tour, and we met in Oklahoma for Thanksgiving, and driving home to Colorado, I told her I was going to leave. And, we'd had some hard times before that and gone through counseling, but this was the last straw because nothing had changed, and or the last final sort of decision. And she didn't take it very well, but I actually stayed around for a couple more months and but knew it was the right decision, and, you know, thought about it and prayed about it and talked to people about it and waited to see if I'd have a change of heart, which I didn't. And, it got to a point where it was time for me to leave, and I left, and we've stayed in contact and had a very sort of peaceful and friendly breakup. And, that was nice to have happen, because there's some ugly ones out there. And, she's doing well, and I'm doing great.
Excellent. I'm really glad to hear that.
It was better for her.
You're doing great. How long after that did you meet the woman you're with now?
I met her 3 months or 4 months after I said I was leaving, but didn't start sort of a relationship with her until I'd actually left the whole marriage and sort of made that official.
So actually it was not the new girlfriend that was the motivator. It was clearly something inside of you that said, I need to clean up what's going on inside of me and open myself up for new possibilities.
Absolutely. And it was, I'm glad of the fact that it wasn't that situation. It wasn't, you know, running off to grab a younger model. it was definitely a decision before I even knew that Jennifer existed. So I was glad of that and proud that there was no, you know, impropriety happening while I was married. And it was all very clean. And you know, it happened quick, but it definitely was meant to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've read your book, and we talked about it on the last show, but this isn't the first time you've done something like this, because on page 29, you talk about risk-taking, and basically what you did with this shift was risky. But here on page 29, you write, I was leaving everything I was familiar with, my friends, my life, the beach, and the city of Sydney that I loved. It was 1982, and I had just turned 24. I was both fearful and excited. Was I doing the right thing? Was this responsible? What did my parents think? Was I nuts for leaving? I was tempted to turn around and say I'd changed my mind, that traveling and climbing in the Himalayas wasn't really that important. But I needed to leave. I needed an adventure. I needed to put my life back on the edge. I smiled and turned and walked briskly onto the plane.
Yeah.
So apparently you told yourself the truth back then at age 24.
Yeah.
How did you do it then, and how was that different than what you just did? How old are you now?
I am 48. So
how was that different at 48 than it was at 24?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think you get to know yourself better. And, you know, back then I was, it was pretty intense. I was leaving, you know, everything. I was leaving the country that I was born in. I was, you know, I had a one-way ticket to go off and seek my, you know, sort of destiny in the mountains, which I loved. So, it was a tough decision back then. I don't know if it's any easier, but I guess over time you get to know yourself better, and you know, as you get older, perhaps you realize, gosh, when you're 24, you think I've got forever, and when you're 48, you think, gosh, I don't have forever. I probably should change things now.
Well, I think also at 24, from reading this, you were going for an adventure and, like you said in that quote, living on the edge type of thing. And it sounds to me like the decisions you were making this time were actually more grounding.
Yeah, very much. It was that was pretty sort of radical. And this was, gosh, you know, I can stay in this city, this house, this relationship work-wise for the next, and the next 10 years could fly by and I'd be okay. But I realized I was living a lie. And I remember sitting down with you, and we talked about that when we had coffee. I realized that I wasn't telling myself the truth, and I was living a lie. And that went really against everything that I ever believed in and everything that I'd just written in my book. I wasn't even living my book right,
you know,
and I needed to do something about
right?
that.
Let's talk about the book, actually, for a minute here. You use your mountaineering experience as a way of learning the lessons and teaching lessons. Tell my listeners a little bit more about what your life experience has been about. I know you've never made it to the top of Everest, but you've been close a few times. Am I right about
right.
that?
That's right.
And
right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've climbed pretty much all my life. When I was 6 years old, we came to the U.S., and we went to the Canadian Rockies, and I looked up in the mountains and turned to my father and said, "Dad, I want to be a mountain climber." And you know, I was technical climbing at the age of 10 and out every weekend, and lived every weekend to rock climb and got into mountaineering at 24 in the Himalayas, and it's been a huge part of my life, and I've climbed all over the world and guided and been on Everest twice, 30 trips to the Himalayas, a few trips to Alaska, South America, so it's been a huge part of my life. And when you spend that much time doing anything that intense, you know, hopefully you learn some things from it. And when I sort of started to, you know, get into the business world, I realized, and into life, there was things that I'd learned from mountaineering that I needed to apply to my everyday life. And, you know, some of the things were, you know, setting goals and overcoming fears and sort of testing and pushing myself, exploring my limits and believing in myself and, you know, setting a decent pace and traveling light and, you know, all those kinds of things that I'd learned from years and years and years of some pretty intense, mountaineering all over the world.
Well, I, also in your introduction, I want to read this too because I think it really brings home what you were just saying. And if I quote you saying, "When you spend a great deal of your life focused on one activity, especially one as mentally, physically, and emotionally demanding as Himalayan mountaineering, when you've lost more than 24 friends to the mountains and had to make life and death decisions over and over again as quickly and easily as choosing what you have for lunch, you can't help but gain some valuable insights into life. Extreme adventures provide extreme lessons. Nature is an unforgiving classroom, and nowhere on earth are the forces of nature more unforgiving than in the highest mountains on the planet. From my experiences, I have learned a great deal about myself, including how to set and achieve goals, how to overcome my doubts and fears, and how to achieve peak personal performance." And I think the point of your book is that you've gotten your lessons that you've extrapolated from these extreme adventures and broken them down to a simple set of lessons for people so that they don't all have to go climb Mount Everest in order to learn what you've learned, but we all have our own personal Everest to climb.
Exactly.
And to me, that is the point. You know, someone else's Mount Everest, you know, might be, you know, getting through college. Someone else's
Absolutely.
Mount Everest might be learning some life skills and balancing a checkbook. You know?
Or somebody's Everest might be being truthful with themselves.
Exactly.
Or truthful with someone else.
Mm-hmm. So as you've been doing this, and I know that, I mean, you have been doing probably what might be considered one of the most dangerous careers, I mean, climbing those
right.
peaks. I know you hold the record for the fastest solo climb of Mount McKinley in Alaska.
That's right.
And, you know, I think in the news, we just read about three guides, I forgot where, but I think in Idaho, that all perished at some hot springs.
Right.
And there was actually an obituary of an American mountaineer who died in the French Alps today.
Yes.
You know Doug?
I know of him. He's part of the Guide Association.
It was interesting that I knew I was having you on the show tonight, and I saw this obituary today.
Yeah.
And you're always taking that risk.
Absolutely.
You know? And, you know, you've survived it all and have grown from it.
Yeah.
So how have you taken all of those very extreme experiences, and how did you narrow it down to the lessons you have in Summit Strategies?
That's a great question. I think, some of them are, pretty basic. But what I believe that I'm now here on earth to do is to help people be the best that they can be and to encourage them to be all that they could be and achieve all they can be on life. And that's a very relative term for all of us. And so the way I thought I could perhaps do that was, and so that people didn't have to go through all the danger and suffering that I did, was to come up with 10 steps, essentially, that people could use to go from point A to point Z, you know, of realizing perhaps what they did want to achieve in their life and how they could do that. So, you know, it was, okay, do this, now do this, now do this, because you can sit back and say, boy, I want to write a book, but how do you do it? What are the steps that you have to go through to achieve that or to achieve anything? And so that's kind of how I broke it down, just really as a you know, little helpful series of lessons that people could learn from. And I just thought about different experiences, and I kind of wanted to use it as a chronology of my life and the experiences that I've had, and I thought deeply about each major, you know, event in my life and what I learned from it.
That's great. But before we go any further, I want to remind my listeners this is a live show tonight, and if you want to call in to share your own experience, ask some questions, or to make some comments about what Gary and I are talking about, the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet, it's the same number, 480-949-1310. So one of the things, one of many things I really like about this book, and I've actually recommended it to a number of clients since we met, is that it's short and simple. And there are so many self-help books and motivational books that you need a lot of motivation just to read through them because they're so long. So, you know, there's so much material.
I call this an airplane book. You know, you can probably fly from Phoenix to L.A. and, you know, finish pretty much most of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly, and that's what I like about it. And even as a therapist, you have some, you know, steps or some suggestions at the end of each chapter, which actually makes things a little bit nicer, too. And the first chapter is Choose Your Mountain. And in it, you talk about motivation, and I know that ego comes into play any time we're trying to achieve something.
Sure.
And on page 8, you write, naturally, practical considerations will come into play. But to find your motivation, you must first tap into the source of your inspiration. And that's an individual thing. Likewise, be wary of desires that arise from the wish to be admired or from jealousy. Now, that's about the ego coming into play and saying, if you have sibling competition to show a brother or sister up, if the goal is to be famous for doing something, then it may be the wrong motivation for doing this. How do you determine, what do you tell people in terms of how to determine if what they're aiming at is coming from that humble place and that pure place as opposed to the ego?
Sure. Good question, and I've learned not to try and tell anyone anything, but and to not judge anyone, because, you know, who am I to judge? But because it's their own deal, but perhaps just to, you know, once again, be honest with themselves and figure out, you know, I had a friend say to me he wanted to write a book, and I said, why? And he said, to make money. And I said, wrong reason. And, you know, I never hoped to, you know, I mean, it would have been great if I'd made a ton of money off my book, but, you know, I probably spent more on it than I've made from it. But, you know, it was a labor of love. I wanted to write a book, and it was a personal goal and a personal accomplishment, and you know, that was something I needed to do. So, you know, I just try and get people to think about what it is they want to accomplish, and you know, is it realistic? You know, if somebody sits there and says they want to make, you know, or grow their business to $10 million, you know, I'm always asking why. You know, why do they want to do that, and get them to dig sort of deep into, to really think about what the motivation is? Because, often they've never even thought about it. They just throw out this goal because it's what they think they're supposed to do or what others will expect from them, rather than, you know, what is it they really want to do? Maybe it's not really they want to get their business to 10 million. They really want to just have enough money where they don't have to worry about money and they can spend time with their family.
Right.
So is 10 million, I worked for a, did some consulting with a financial planner, and he said, my goal this year is to double my clients. And I said, why? You know, you're just going to have twice as many headaches.
Right.
And he was like, huh, you know, he just, and he was a financial planner, a numbers guy, and he just didn't quite get it. I mean, mm-hmm. I was trying to get him to think, you know, was the goal to make more money, or was it, did you really want to have more, twice as many clients? And he really didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what, you know, today's society makes you think. You know, it's after more stuff,
right?
As opposed to, you know, people just, I just encourage people to just slow down. You know, go out and go to Starbucks by yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you know,
and think and go inward.
Things.
Exactly.
You know, think about your life. Think about, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing in life?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to me, that's what we're on the planet for—to really look at what we're supposed to do. And if it's to play music, you know, get up an hour earlier before you go to work and play your music. You don't have to wait until you're retired. Play it on Saturday. But you know, if that's what's important to you, then be honest with yourself, tell the truth to yourself faster, and put the time in to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're talking about the book writing, and that is actually one of the goals I've been working on. I've been working with a friend of mine who's a coach, and since we talked last, actually in the last 2 months, after about a year and a half's effort, I actually now have the trademark for Tell the Truth Faster.
Good for you.
It's now registered, and there's a little R with a circle now on my website.
Right.
And it's mine.
That's
and
great.
So the next step is, you know, what's my next step? And because the desire has been to write a book, and you talked about purpose, and to me that we have a life's purpose or a spiritual purpose, all of us have that in life, and many of us go through life without ever identifying it, or we know what it is, but we're too afraid to speak it,
right?
Because we're afraid of what other people are going to say to us and how they're going to judge us. And because maybe what we know to be our purpose is something very different than what anybody else in our family has ever done.
Absolutely.
Or is so out of character for how people see us, that we buy into that and we don't speak it.
Right.
So in terms of writing my book, you know, it's been, I know that I have an outline and I need to get the introduction written to get started on it. And I've been processing it and trying to just get quiet like you're talking about and just let it come. And I haven't pressured myself, and I haven't judged myself as to why it hasn't come yet, because I know it'll start flowing when it's ready to flow.
And some days it does, and some days it doesn't. I wrote some chapters in 3 hours, and it was the best chapter, and other chapters took a month, and they, you know, didn't happen. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just letting it flow. That's a big part of it.
Right. And another part of it you mentioned earlier is about simplifying. You know, so many of us are so cluttered in our lives that it's hard to clear our minds and simplify our thought process. Talk about simplification for a bit, if you would.
Well, you know, we're so busy with so many things. I think people are, you know, I didn't come up with this, but we're afraid to say no. You know, they overcommit to so many things that their life is just hectic and crazy. You know, I set a lot of sort of short-term goals of what I'm going to accomplish. I know, you know, it's Friday night. There's things I'm going to accomplish this weekend. And then I try and sort of work through, you know, little day-to-day chores through the week so that I have some evenings free to do the things I really want to do. And most people are so cluttered with, life and things and, you know, electronics that they don't have any time for themselves. And it's very easy to get busy with all that stuff and really sort of avoid what's really true to yourself. And that comes down to, you know, sitting down or going for a walk by yourself and searching your heart and saying, what is really, really important to me? I'm doing all these things, but is it bringing me happiness? Is it bringing me satisfaction? Is it bringing me the joy that I look for? And if not, then you know, it's a matter of pulling out the calendar and just, okay, I'm going to say no to this. I'm going to cancel this. I'm going to stop going to this club. I'm going to, you know, stop watching TV and read a book or do the other things that are important to me, because I've told myself they're important to me.
In the chapter called Lighten Your Load, I want to read this because I think it also really brings home what you're talking about. It's on page 34 and 35. Spending your time getting rid of possessions rather than buying more is the key to simplifying life. This includes piles of paper, projects you never get to, and might come in handy someday, supplies crammed in your garage, attic, and closets. Clutter not only fills your physical environment, but also your brain, slowing you down, distracting you, and making it difficult to accomplish your real goals. Most people go on holiday with far too much luggage and go through life with far too much baggage. Leave behind the things that will weigh you down and that take your focus off your goals and dreams. Make room for more of what you really need. A weekend or month spent getting rid of extraneous stuff that you have accumulated will be well worth the time. Ask yourself why you hold on to things and try to whittle your possessions down to only those things you actually use. And you end it with, letting go of belongings releases the power and creates a vacuum that forces the universe to fill the void. If we took time to notice, we'd see that whatever we truly need is provided for us. Now, you did that. I mean, I'm taking this to extreme, not just in the sense of physical clutter, but, and I'm not calling your ex-wife clutter, but basically when we make decisions that release certain relationships, even relationships to a job or a career, we may not even know where we're going, but it opens that door, creates that vacuum, and allows something better, if we allow it to come in.
Exactly.
And it's about trusting. It's about really trusting your gut and trusting that this will happen, that the universe really is going to take care of you in that.
Exactly. I mean, how many of us are really going to end up on the street? And, and I left a 12-year okay marriage, and I left a beautiful city, and I left a decent life to get into a great relationship, to find a dream job, and now I have a home in beautiful Park City, Utah, in the Midwest, and we're building a home in Costa Rica.
Wow.
So my life was okay, but I was willing, and I drove away, leaving a $500,000 house, and I left with my car and whatever I could fit in it. Left the house, left everything, just opened myself to realizing, I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think, if people can, it's hard, but you talked about it, it's trusting. If you can trust that, you'll be okay, that the universe will provide, it's amazing, what happens. And I learned, back 20 years ago, I was sitting in Kathmandu, and a friend of mine came on a hiking trip, and he borrowed a sweater, and he was wearing it, and it looked good on him, it fit him good, and he was wearing it, and I said, can I have my sweater back? And it's so funny, because I didn't need that sweater, and ever since then, it changed my life, because I realized that I didn't need so many things, and he would have enjoyed it and got a lot more joy out of it than I did. And so now I am continually giving away money and things, and the more stuff I give away, it is just like a vacuum. The universe just fills it up with abundance in every area of my life, and it's pretty darn amazing.
Now, the difference is fear for most people. I really believe
absolutely.
It is scary to do what you're talking about.
No, it is.
But people who live in the fear aspect of it, even if they leave one thing, they're usually so terrified that nothing's going to take its place that they crash, and their fear is forcing decisions that may not really be truthfully what will move them along.
Right.
So fear is an issue that comes up for a lot of people, and I know actually you have a whole chapter called Overcoming Your Fear. And again, a quote, "The fear hadn't gone away. It was there all the time. I had simply decided to acknowledge it, accept it, put it in its place for a moment, and do what I needed to do."
Right.
In other words, surrender to it, really, and don't let it control the decision.
Absolutely.
You will not overcome your fear unless you are honest with yourself. Admit that the fear is there, and remember that experiencing fear is okay. This is the first step. And again, those are your words. And to me, I think that's the most difficult thing for most people, including myself, to be able to overcome. And that's why I just realized, that's the name of your chapter, Overcome Fear. What do you say to people when they're talking about how scary it is? Obviously, climbing Mount Everest is scary. What do you say to people when they say, "Oh, I can't quit my job. I'm too frightened. What if I don't find another one?"
I say, "What's the worst that could happen?"
Exactly. And what did you say to yourself when you left the career you had before going into this new business? What was the worst that could happen?
Yes. That's pretty much exactly what I've learned. I think that the fear sort of aspect or going out there, it's like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it gets. So you start having faith in yourself. I describe it like somebody walking up to a chalk line on the road, and you come up to it and you back off, and you come up to it and you back off, and you come up to it, and that's whatever your line is that you need to step over, and you get really good at it, and it becomes a habit, and you, whenever it comes to something else, a promotion, asking for a date, asking for, a deal, whatever it is, asking for a sale, you get to that line and you back off. And hopefully you someday step over that, and then you kind of go, "Oh, wow, that wasn't so bad." And then the next time you see that line, you know, "Hey, I stepped over it before, and the worst didn't happen. I'm going to step over it again." And you
or the worst did happen, and I survived it.
Exactly.
Right. Because basically, what you're talking about is basic psychology 101. You're talking about conditioned behavior. You're talking about programming new behaviors and unprogramming behaviors that aren't working. In other words, what you're saying is that if you're afraid and you walk through it, it's difficult the first few times.
Yes.
But as you keep doing it, you start realizing, "Wow, I've done that again." And it starts becoming second nature, where before the fear and the blocks were second nature, now the excitement and the motivation is the second nature, because you never know. You know that something new and something great is around the corner because of the excitement of having broken through another wall of fear.
Exactly. So. The composer Yanni talks about, he looks for the feeling of being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Then he knows he's probably doing the right thing.
Yes. So let's talk about business then. So you left a career and a job in Colorado, and did you already have contacts to Backwoods, or was this something that showed itself after you made the move?
No, it's kind of another wild story. As I was doing that 10,000-mile tour, and I'd been working in the business world. I'd worked in radio advertising sales, and I wrote my book, and I you know, did different sort of marketing consulting projects, and I had this idea in my mind about how an adventure travel company could work. And that was my love, and because I loved, you know, taking people into the different parts of the world and showing them exciting things. And I literally heard about this company in the Midwest, and one day sat there, and I didn't have a marketing plan and thought that I needed one, and I just said, I'm going to call. And I picked up the phone, and I called the company, got through the voicemail, didn't know who it was that I was going to speak to, and left a message and just said, I'm looking at expanding my adventure travel company. I've got this idea. I've done this and that. You know, perhaps we could meet. And it was totally out of the blue, and we ended up meeting and putting together a business plan, and you know, that developed into another project, and now I'm running, you know, these 8 stores in the Midwest with Jennifer, and you know, we're up 30% from last year. Last year we were up 30% from the year before, and the adventure travel business has grown, you know, enormously in the last year. And so you know, it was just making that phone call. I was sitting there with an idea, and anyone else could have made that phone call. Mm-hmm. Backwoods was looking for an adventure travel component, and there's plenty of other adventure travel guides and outfitters in the country, but they've been around 30 years. I made the call.
So Backwoods is 6 stores in the Midwest, but it's also people can purchase things via the website too, right?
Well, we're going to be doing that in the next month.
Oh, okay.
We're just launching that.
So in addition to the stores and the equipment that you're selling, it's also about putting together adventure journeys for people.
Correct. It wasn't before I called them, though.
So even my listeners, if they're looking for some river rafting or some mountain climbing or, you know, some kind of adventure like that, they could go to backwoods.com and backwoodsadventures.com and find out what's available and where they might want to go.
Absolutely, and we'd love to chat with them. And, you know, what I found more than anything is, you know, travel is a catalyst for change. And
mm-hmm.
kind of like what you do in your business, I find that if people can get away from their day-to-day lives, that's when they start to think about what's really important in their life. And that's what I'm really passionate about.
Right. One of my teachers, Sandra Ray, has always said that in terms of spiritual purification, international travel is one of the best ways for spiritual purification. And I really understood that. I mean, I've traveled all over Europe and back before the breakup of the Soviet Union. I was going there to talk to people and taking teams over there to deal with the HIV and AIDS epidemic before it got too bad over there.
Right.
And we were in Siberia in the middle of winter.
Wow.
I was in places and doing things I never dreamed I would. But anytime you're in a place where you may not speak the language, the money isn't familiar,
right,
you don't know the geography, there's a sense of surrender that you have to do if you're going to make it through.
Yes.
And that's the spiritual purification.
Absolutely.
And I would imagine it's the same thing when you're climbing a mountain. There's a certain sense of surrender that you have to do in order to move to the next level, literally, without the fear attached.
Very much. Very much.
So we're talking about spiritual purification, and you know, I've always agreed with Sandra Ray, and you're saying the same thing. I mean, doing these adventures, doing something out of character, out of context for yourself, taking yourself out of the business world you're in and putting yourself on a river somewhere or mountain climbing or hiking allows you to clear your head a lot.
Absolutely, and that's really what I care about. People getting out of their comfort mm-hmm. zone and doing something completely different mm-hmm. that can challenge them. I mean, it's not like somebody might be thinking, gosh, I want to rappel down a waterfall in Costa Rica. It's not the rappelling or the waterfall that's the point. It's getting out of your comfort zone and doing something, you know, totally fun, totally safe, that's going to help you, you know, realize what your life is really all about.
Mm-hmm. And basically what Backwoods Adventures is really selling is that chance to clear your head and that chance to take your life to the next level.
Exactly.
It's just done through
exactly.
the mountains and the rivers. And what other adventures do you have besides mountain climbing and river?
Well, I'm leaving next Friday night, actually, for a week in Costa Rica with a group. We're taking 16 people. And then we are hiking around Europe for a week in July. And we take people to the base of Mount Everest, just a hiking trip in Nepal. And we go up Kilimanjaro. And then we do some, you know, sort of fun long weekends in Colorado going skiing and snowshoeing and fly fishing and, you know, just get people away from what they normally do and just get them to relax and have fun.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you deal with families and there's a huge disconnect problem and a divorce problem in this country. But you know what's amazing, and you know this, is how few couples plan to go away together for a weekend and have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I can be a catalyst for that, where because often they don't plan it, and I try and get people, hey, look at your calendar now for the next year, and every 3 to 4 months, mark a weekend and go away and do something fun, whether it's in Vegas or Los Angeles or, you know, Colorado or, you know, 100 miles down the road. Go away from your normal life
mm-hmm.
and do something fun together.
I mean, a routine thing that I hear from couples that I work with all the time who are having a lot of problems and are not having any sex at home and stuff, they go away for a weekend and the sex is great again.
Right.
It's all of a sudden the newness of it, the romance, the adventure of being in a hotel and doing something different and not having the things that remind them of the problems they're experiencing
exactly.
right there.
And don't take
and
the
a
kid.
Lot of them report that... And I tell them, then go away twice a week, twice a month.
Right.
You know, take a day trip and stay overnight or check into a hotel downtown L.A. if you're in L.A. or downtown Phoenix. And you don't have to go that far to have an adventure right in your own town.
Exactly.
You know? And you're right, because a lot of people get so caught up in the stresses that they forget to plan some fun. Now, we most of it think fun is a spontaneous thing, but there's nothing wrong with planning time for fun.
Absolutely, because life gets busy, and you know, if you end up on a Thursday or Friday night, you're tired, you're not going to go away, whereas if you put it in your calendar and you commit to it, it's much more likely to happen, especially if you buy the airplane tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But plan it 6 months out.
My first trip to Europe was 1983, and that's exactly what I did. I didn't have a lot of money, and I knew that if I just took one step at
right.
a time, and the first thing I did was set the dates and buy the plane ticket. Now I was committed.
Right.
So the next thing I did was I had to manifest the money for hotels.
Exactly.
And that I did. And the next thing I did, I had to manifest the money for some spending money. And it's like, before I knew it, I had a two-week vacation in Europe. It was my first time abroad, and it woke something up inside of me that I didn't even know existed.
That's great.
You know? And
I tell people if they don't commit, the universe isn't going to help you get there.
Mm-hmm.
So don't worry about how you're going to afford it, but your example is exactly right. You know, commit to it and let forces happen that'll pull all that together, and you'll probably start saving some money that you would have spent. Well, I just read an article that Americans spent $4 billion last year on ringtones for their cell phones.
Are you kidding me?
No. No. So, you know, whether it's Starbucks or sodas or whatever, I mean, probably if people made their own lunch for a year, they could probably afford a week in Europe. I mean,
mm-hmm.
and to me, and travel's been a huge part of my life, but to me, that's what life is about. I don't think we're on this planet to, you know, go to work and, you know, pay the rent.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so true. I mean, even people whose income are not that great, they're feeling, you know, I use this example a lot. I mean, there are people who work assembly lines in factories. Some of them may say to you they really enjoy what they do, and I don't doubt that. But many of them see that assembly line work, the monotony of it, as a means to an end because the paycheck allows them the boat on the weekends
sure.
or the ability to to travel when they want to, or, you know, whatever adventures they need to do. It's a means to an end instead of they don't see it as drudgery because they're very grateful to be on that assembly line every day because of what it allows them to do when they're not there.
In Australia, we call it working to live rather than living to work.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Very true.
So I'm going to remind people again, it's backwoodsadventures.com, backwoodsadventures.com. And if you forget that, you can easily go to tellthetruthfaster.com, which all of you should be able to remember by now. And there'll be a link to that website on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. And if you want to let me know about tonight's show or any other show you may have listened to, this show will be archived along with Gary's past show from 2003. You can listen to any of the shows free of charge. You just click on the icon for the speaker, and it'll download the MP3, and you can listen to every show I've done over the last 4 years on tellthetruthfaster.com, and it's a great way to get in touch with me or with Gary or any of my guests. So we have a few minutes left, Gary. What do you want to leave people with?
Well, a couple of things that Tell the Truth Faster, I've realized, gives you confidence, which can lead to, you know, making the deal, getting the job, getting the date, let alone it builds up your self-esteem. So once you stop, you know, lying to yourself and you start telling the truth faster, being confident is very attractive to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it has made a huge difference in my life. But I want to ask you a question. This is actually a question my girlfriend posed.
Okay.
And the question is, can you tell the truth too fast?
That's a good question. I get variations on that a lot. Sometimes the time and the place or the person, it may not be appropriate to just jump into it and say what's on your mind. It may be, it's just like 12-step programs tell people when they're making their amends. Sometimes it's about forgiveness and making your amends within your heart, because it may be just too hurtful to go to the individual you need to, and there's no sense in your healing process to bring more hurt on somebody else. So there is a time, I mean, telling the truth faster to someone else means going inside yourself to know whether this is the right time to really do this communication. And it may or may not be. You also need to ask yourself, am I withholding it because I think they're going to be hurt, or am I withholding it because I'm afraid of what I'm going to have to deal with in terms of their reaction? So you're right, and it becomes a fine line for most people to gauge the time and the place, and if that individual, if you really feel that an individual is going to hear what you have to say. And sometimes it's better to do it in writing so they have time to absorb it and integrate it instead of verbally, where the defensiveness may get in the way from really hearing. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. No, that's good. And because telling the truth faster is also, you know, the word faster is a relative term.
Right.
I climbed McKinley much faster than other people, but it's a relative situation, and I think, yeah, we have to find what's right for us.
Right.
But I think a lot of people are too fearful about telling the truth at all because of what will happen. But, you know, you only get one turnaround on this earth unless you are Buddhist. you've got to look into your heart and figure out what's right for you.
Exactly. I want to read one last thing as we close off here. It's from Seek Peace Within. We all have an Everest to face in our lives, whether it's a physical, mental, emotional, social, spiritual, or financial mountain before you. It's crucial always to have dreams and goals to pull you forward. But in the end, conquering your Everest isn't the real secret to inner peace. It's what you learn and what you become from the attempt and how you apply that knowledge to your next mountain, to your next challenge. Couldn't have said it better myself. Gary, this has been such a treat to reconnect with you, and I'm sure my listeners got a lot out of this today.
Oh.
So I want to thank you and wish you a bon voyage on your next journey.
Thank you so much.
And I actually would like to speak to you over the next few days, so if you're going to be around, let's connect, okay?
Do that. Thank you so much.
Okay, and I want to thank all of you for listening. This is Stuart Altschuler on KXAM in Phoenix, 1310, inviting you back next Friday night at 7 to 8 o'clock for Tell the Truth Faster. Have a good weekend.